Thank you. If you're still open there at Haggai chapter 2, this is what I want to talk about a little bit tonight. This was part of a recent reading with the daily Bible reading that I've been doing, and I think Curtis and Carolyn are using the same daily Bible reading. And as I read through this, I kind of caught on to a couple of things I had not noticed before. And remember, Haggai, he's one of what we call the minor prophets. And so, of course, the prophets are foretelling the things that will be coming in the future. They're also instructing the people and sometimes, you know, begging the people, mourning for the people because of their unfaithfulness. And, of course, Haggai does a lot of instruction here. He's encouraging the people to get on the ball and get this temple rebuilt. This time period is after the Babylonian captivity, when the Persian king Cyrus allowed the people, God's people, to go back to the land, go back and rebuild Jerusalem, rebuild the temple. And they're slow doing that. It's not time to do this. Let's get our homes built first. The timing's not right. Well, Haggai comes along and really encourages them. And we see Ezra doing the same thing. And so Haggai, here is a contemporary also with Zechariah. And Haggai is wanting them to get the physical house of the Lord rebuilt. Zechariah is wanting them to rebuild their spiritual house, their own selves. Here Haggai is addressing Zerubbabel, the governor, Joshua or Jeshua, the high priest, and, telling them that, need to get on the ball and get this temple rebuilt. And as we look there in verse 3, he makes a comment about, and it harkens back to Ezra chapter 3, because we see when the foundation of the temple was built there in Ezra chapter 3, we see that the people they could not distinguish between the people crying and the people crying out of sorrow and people crying out of joy. The older people that remembered the original temple, they're crying because they're seeing the new temple rebuilt. The younger ones are happy because it's being done. The other ones are reminiscing, and the others are excited. They're younger because of what they're accomplishing, but they didn't experience it. But they're cheering for it, and the others are crying over it. But here we see Haggai, he's talking about it in a different way too, that some of the older ones that are there are actually disappointed. It just doesn't compare to the glory of the original temple. They've got the foundation laid, they're ready to build, and it's just not, they can tell it's not going to have the glory of Solomon's temple. It's kind of some ways a disappointment. They're doing the best they can, in other words. Does it not seem to you like nothing in comparison to what had been on this site originally, what we're rebuilding now? But Haggai says, take courage, Zerubbabel. Move ahead, charge ahead, get it done anyway, even though it may not compare in grandeur and glory to what was here before. Take new courage. I am with you, says the Lord of hosts. And just as, I promised the people when I brought them out of Egypt, I am in your midst. I promised them I was in their midst, and just like the people as they came out of Egypt, I'm in your midst as well, you all that are coming out of Babylon. Do not fear. And he says in verse 6, once more in a short while, I'm going to shake the heavens and the earth, the sea also, and the dry land. I'll shake all the nations, and they will come with the wealth of all nations and will fill this house with glory, says the Lord of hosts. Now, as I've studied some of the minor prophets in the book of Haggai 2, it cross-references how Cyrus allowed the people to bring back the treasures of the temple, the gold and the silver that Nebuchadnezzar had taken away almost 70 years before. They were allowed to take it back. So, yeah, the kings of the nations are letting them, you know, have the gold and the silver. And in Isaiah, it also talks about the kings of, you know, allow all this to, you know, will bring gifts for the temple. But it's interesting, as I was looking at the New King James Version, I use the New American Standard Version, where it says here in verse 7, the wealth of all nations. It says in the New King James Version, the desire of all nations, and it has it capitalized. And, you know, that's, you know, you kind of take sometimes that with a grain of salt. But apparently in some of the versions, they think that wealth of all nations, that the desire of all nations, and capitalized. And when that's capitalized, usually that's referring to deity, right? When you see it like that. So I'll shake all the nations, and they'll come with the wealth of all nations, or with the desire of all nations, with God, and fill this house with glory, says the Lord of hosts. Now here, interesting, again, remember, this temple was not grand. It was simple in design in comparison to Solomon's temple. But yet it's going to be filled with glory, with the wealth of all nations, or the desire of all nations, in capital letters, deity, says the Lord of hosts. Verse 8 is interesting. God says, the silver is mine and the gold is mine. So even if you came and you filled up God's temple, you filled up this temple with silver and with gold and made it as grand as you could, guess what? That all belonged to God anyway, didn't it? You really haven't done anything really for that building by filling it with gold and silver, because all that belonged to God before anyway. However, if you think about it in terms of prophecy, and I mentioned Isaiah, you know, talked about how the in verse you know, how the wealth of all nations, filling the house with glory, and how the nations would come with these. You know, that's all prophecy too. And what's Isaiah talking about? He's foretelling a greater time that's going to come too. And I think we all know through our study what that greater time is going to be. Who is going to come? You know, who are the prophets foretelling that's going to come to the earth that everybody has been waiting for? But the Messiah. I hope I'm not going too far out here, but I'm thinking that this wealth of all nations, this desire of all nations, is foretelling the coming one, Jesus Christ, and how all the nations will come to Jerusalem, how this simple temple, will be filled with glory. And think, it's going to have a major renovation at some point. You know, Herod's going to come in. He's not going to apparently knock it down and rebuild a greater building, but he's going to renovate this more simple temple and make it a grander building. But still, I think this house will be filled with glory. Guess who is going to come into this house of God? As a 12-year-old. Guess who's going to come back as a 30-something and cleanse the temple? And in the days before he dies, he's going to come back and cleanse the temple again. He's going to teach in the temple. The old temple of Solomon never had that, did it? The Messiah never set foot in that original temple. But this more simple temple, it's going to be filled with glory. The wealth of all nations, desire of all nations. And that's going to be greater than any silver or any gold, because all that belongs to God anyway, this Messiah that's going to come. And this latter glory of the house will be greater than the former. Verse 9 says, the Lord of hosts, in this place I shall give peace. The Prince of Peace, declares the Lord of hosts. It's such a wonderful time that's going to be coming, and Haggai is encouraging these people, don't feel despondent over this simple building, this building that doesn't compare to what you remember as a child before you went into captivity. It's going to have greater days ahead. Well, we know at some point that temple's going to be destroyed, that physical temple, but it's going to see some glory before that happens. And in that place, I will give peace. And we do know how all the nations would have that opportunity. On the day of Pentecost, we see all the Jews from all these other nations that had dispersed throughout the world, didn't come back after captivity, but they'd come back for Passover, stay over until Pentecost. We see all these Jews from other countries. But then we see, too, how the gospel is for all, and not much later we'll see the Gentiles that will be able to have a covenant relationship with God. All the nations are going to come, and the glory is going to be greater. And it's because of this glory that's going to come, this desire of all nations, Jesus Christ, and all the world is going to have that opportunity, and God will be glorified, and this temple, Jesus, and it's just a wonderful story when you begin to realize all of the things that prophecy tells us about what's to come about the Messiah, and how all the world, that's us, isn't it? And we have that opportunity too. To know this Prince of Peace. Peace can be given to us as well. We're able to partake of these more glorified days that came later, more glorious than what the people had experienced during Solomon, more glorious than what these people are experiencing as they rebuild the temple. The sorrow they feel, and yet the joy they feel, there's better days coming ahead, and that's days that give us hope, give us promise. And so as we close the service tonight, just some words of hope, some words for each one of us, and if we don't have that hope, we can find that hope, can't we? And that's the purpose for extending the invitation, so that we all can have that opportunity to be part of the new covenant, as we see the prophecy fulfilled, and as we see that peace that comes, that's available even to each one of us today. So as we sing the invitation song, if you're subject to the invitation, or if you need to return to a covenant relationship with God, this is your opportunity to do that. And we'd encourage you to do that at this time as we sing our invitation song.